From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo and the legislature agree to allow limited use of medical marijuana. Our political observer Alan Shartok will share his thoughts on that and a deal on teacher evaluations. And we'll take you to the Mohawk Valley, where officials are excited about a new casino proposal. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and the legislature agreed this week to have a limited medical marijuana program for patients with cancer, AIDS, and childhood seizure disorders. It will not allow the drug to be smoked. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Cuomo, who had expressed reservations about allowing medical marijuana, says the bill will grant sick people access to the drug while imposing limits that he says will prevent abuse of marijuana.
So there are certainly significant medical benefits that can be garnered. At the same time, it's a difficult issue because there are also risks that have to be averted, public health risks, public safety risks, and we believe this bill strikes the right balance.
The bill will not allow the smoking of marijuana. Cuomo's acting health commissioner says using a vaporizer can work just as well. Only doctors will be allowed to prescribe the drug, and they'll have to take a special course before they're permitted to do so. Patients will have to register with the state health department, and they'll have to carry their registration cards everywhere they go. And there will be criminal penalties for doctors and patients who try to sell or use the drug for other purposes. The governor says one of the most important provisions to him, though, is that he can shut down the program at any time for any reason.
It basically has a fundamental fail-safe, what I call you can just pull the plug out of the wall at any moment, and the entire system stops. And that's the governor's ability to suspend the system upon the recommendation of the superintendent of state police or the recommendation of the commissioner of health because they detect a risk in either public safety or public health.
Advocates for medical marijuana, who held a vigil at the Capitol for the past several days, were cautiously supportive. Holly Anderson with the Breast Cancer Coalition of Rochester says she's excited and relieved that there will be some sort of measure approved this year, but
it's a little disappointing in that the smoking has been eliminated, and really plants have been eliminated.
She's also concerned that some of the restrictions on doctors, including possible felony charges for any alleged abuses, could discourage physicians from prescribing the drug. Senate sponsor Diane Savino had initially said that eliminating smoking of marijuana as a treatment was a non-starter, but she now says she had to compromise in order to get relief for children with severe seizure disorders who can benefit from an oil-based derivative of marijuana. Several of the children had also been in the halls outside the governor's office.
But you can't stand in the way, because there are other delivery methods that are as effective. Vaporizing is one of them. Many patients have actually started now using the e-cigarette version with medical marijuana as well. But for the children you've all seen here daily, who will benefit from oils, how could we say no and stand in the way on smoking? It just made no sense.
Under the plan, the State Department of Health will choose five private companies to grow and distribute the marijuana, all within New York State. Each company will be eligible to run four dispensaries for a total of 20 statewide. It will be some time, though, before patients will have access to the drug. The new law will not take effect for 18 months, even longer if Cuomo's health department decides more time is needed to get the program up and running. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, New York set to become the 23rd state in the nation to legalize medical marijuana. An agreement announced by legislative leaders yesterday. One part of it involves the idea that you won't be able to smoke the drug.
That's right. You know, the governor gets his way on this. Diane Savino of the famous gang of four or five that has helped the Republicans stay in power now has to show that she has progressive roots to the Democrats, and she is right on the issue. There should be medical marijuana. It should stop some of the worst suffering of some of the people that we know have it with terrible degenerative diseases. We know it works. We know other states have it. The governor insists that it not be smoked. It only be delivered in other ways. And it's something which shows that he is basically a thinking, balanced, fairly conservative fellow. And it's the foot in the door. They have to take it because they really have no choice. But in effect, it really is not what a lot of people had hoped for. Nevertheless, it's something. It becomes one more drug, and it'll be dispensed as a drug.
Another big deal reached by lawmakers, Alan, is low-rated teachers in New York won't be at risk of losing their jobs based simply on student performance on the new Common Core test, at least for a few years under the legislation.
This is fascinating. First of all, they were afraid that the money get taken away if they did that by the feds in terms of the race to the top. Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, has signaled no such thing. They can do this, that they're happy with it. There's a larger story here. As you may remember, it wasn't that long ago, there was a huge brouhaha at the Working Families Convention. Governor Cuomo, who was booed by some of the progressives there, won the day. Some say with the help of the powerful New York City Teachers Union, Michael Mulgrew being the president. We have had denials of that. But let's just assume that it's true for a moment and that they knew they were going to have to work for the governor. And this is the number one issue for so many teachers. They don't want tenure messed with, and they don't want to be fired because of the way in which the tests have come out. So this is a huge win for the teachers union, and the governor obviously knew how to play these cards.
This week, fresh off an announcement that she was going to run for governor with her running mate Tim Wu, Zephyr Teachout joined you in the studio for a taping of the Capital Connection. She's a self-described progressive Democrat who's going to take on Governor Cuomo in a primary. Quite a conversation.
Well, yes, look, she's not pulling any punches. You know, she basically represents that progressive wing of the Democratic Party who lost out in the great battle with the Working Families Party at the convention, in which the unions pretty well decided Cuomo was going to be the candidate, he was going to win, and that they were going to support him in the Working Families debate so that he would have that little line to run on. The progressives actually were very angry, and they booed him, and they carried on. But, you know, those who have the money rule, the golden rule. So the unions got their way. And Zephyr Teachout, with one of the best names in all organized politics, she said that her father and mother were hippies, and hence Zephyr Teachout is the family name. But she's strong. She's an associate professor of law at the Fordham Law School. Her running mate is a Columbia professor. They are strong, and they're not afraid to say the truth. When you ask her, well, isn't she afraid to go up against somebody like Cuomo, who doesn't have a reputation of suffering enemies well, she said she's not afraid. And you look in her eyes, and she doesn't look like she's afraid. So it could be a little bit embarrassing for the governor. Here's why. If she actually gets on the ballot and she claims they'll do everything in their power to keep her off the ballot, she needs 15,000 real signatures, which means she probably needs about 30,000 because people don't get their address right or they don't put their middle initial in correctly or whatever they're not doing. So they'll try to kick her off the ballot. But if she gets on, she's going to get a lot of votes in the Democratic primary from the progressive community. And that's something I think that Andrew Cuomo doesn't want to have happen.
There's been a scourge of heroin abuse in the region and the country, Alan. And in New York, lawmakers have agreed on legislation to curb the problem.
Well, look, you can treat the symptom or you can treat the reason, the causality. You know, I have to say that in New York State, you have a governor who now comes out quite correctly with legislative leaders and say, we have to do something. We're going to get the insurance companies to pay up for remediation and all the rest.
But at the same time, if you're a fiscal conservative and you are limiting the amount of money that is available for things like education and other things, then what happens is, of course, the symptom is not the real cause. And that is something that we ought to think about. If there is this incredible rise of heroin and opioid addiction in the United States, there's got to be a reason for it. What is it? Cyclical? Is it in the air? No. If we leave our people and our children and others hopeless, you're going to get this dependency. And then, you know, you create another industry to cure the dependency without getting to the root causes.
Well, what came of a trial with state senator and former Queens Republican leader Malcolm Smith was ultimately a mistrial, Alan.
This one really has a lot of people shaking their heads. It turns out that two of the people who were involved in the whole mess were talking to each other on the phone in Yiddish, and the court could not provide instantaneous translation, nor did the prosecutors work closely with the court in making sure that these conversations were translated. So the court had no choice, because a lot of the jurors wanted to go home, in saying, okay, we're going to have to declare a mistrial, and it'll be until January. That means that Malcolm Smith will be able to run for office another time as a person who has not been convicted of anything. And yet, you look at some of the evidence that has come out, people getting envelopes stuffed with cash and everything else, all being photographed in the FBI and recorded. Wow. If you can get off on something like this that easily because of a Yiddish translation, things aren't good.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A federally proposed water rule has New York farmers and others around the nation up in arms. They see it as an attempt to regulate virtually all water and warn if implemented, the measure will raise the phrase red tape to a whole new level. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers are advancing a plan released March 25th to greatly expand what they consider to be waters of the U.S. under the 1972 Clean Water Act. The proposal calls for expanding federal authority to regulate land use activities around small creeks and streams, including pathways and ditches that only carry water during and immediately after rainfall. New York Farm Bureau President Dean Norton says there's been an ongoing disagreement over the definition of navigable, which the Supreme Court says means any body of water that you can row a canoe down or that can be used for interstate commerce.
The rule that the EPA has authored and is looking for comments right now would change what the term navigable was, would change some of the sciences for the term navigable. The EPA is now saying that, say, if Dean Norton has a depression in one of his fields and holds a body of water for longer than 4 days, that is a navigable water. And the reason they're saying that that's a navigable water is because the water is going to leach through the topsoil into the groundwater below, and that groundwater through underground streams and channels could end up in a river that is used for commercial purposes.
Norton explained such land would then fall under EPA guidance.
And would require us to get an EPA permit before we could till that soil, put tile in that soil, before we could possibly remove some hedgerows.
Norton thinks the agencies are overreaching in their efforts to protect the environment and will impact more than 106 million acres across the country, requiring permitting and paperwork for routine tasks.
This is also going to require our local municipalities, towns, villages, counties, New York State, It's going to require them to get permits anytime they want to clean a roadside ditch or do any maintenance to our roads and any of the other things that, you know, we require of our municipalities.
Senior Policy Advisor to the Assistant Administrator for Water at the EPA, Ellen Galinsky, counters the proposal does not affect agriculture and farmers have nothing to worry about.
We have been going all over the country to try to talk to the farmers themselves to reassure them that all the exemptions that they have had from the Clean Water Act will continue.
The Supreme Court twice rejected EPA claims that any body of water becomes federally regulated by its mere existence. Galinsky notes that in its most recent decision, the court was divided.
There was a majority opinion and a minority opinion, and they asked us to clarify, you know, in plain English, what is meant by these waters, because the Clean Water Act never intended for waters of the U.S. to only be waters that you could put a big boat in. It was intended to cover the tributaries in our country where we want to protect water quality for the use of our citizens.
Galinsky believes a lot of misinformation has been disseminated that there will be changes to exemptions and inclusions for agriculture that have always been there.
It does not change any of those.
The public comment period for the new proposed regulation has been extended until mid-October.
We will carefully go through all of the comments. We will respond to them. It's a very formal process that we do this in. And then we will put out a revised proposed final rule to go into effect. And in some cases, if there's changes that are, they call it a logical outgrowth. If you make changes that are not a logical outgrowth of what was already in the proposal, then you end up reproposing it for another big comment period. So I don't know if that's going to happen or not. What we're hoping to do is to finalize the rule sometime in the spring of 2015.
Meanwhile, the New York Farm Bureau is forging ahead with a Ditch the Rule campaign via social media, playing on the ditches angle, looking to the Obama administration to direct the agencies to come up with a more sensible plan that won't burden farmers and municipalities. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With proposals for casinos ahead of a June 30th deadline seemingly announced every day, officials in the Mohawk Valley are enthusiastic about a new casino proposal close to home, but that project could be at a disadvantage with other projects on the table vying for a casino license. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
Monday, the Montgomery County town of Florida voted unanimously on a resolution in support of a casino project to be located off I-90's exit 27 on a parcel overlooking the city of Amsterdam. The $250 million project is being proposed by Canadian developers Clairvest Group, Inc. and Great Canadian Gaming Corp. They're proposing a gaming facility that would also feature a 100-room hotel as well as dining and entertainment options. Now that the details have been presented to the public and the town board, Florida Supervisor Eric Mead said he feels, quote, 100 times better about siting a casino in his community.
There was no opposition to this, no picketing against casinos. Everybody was in favor, and we had full board support. It was 100% across the board. So now I feel, you know, 100 times better, like I said, than I ever have.
Mead said Florida stands alone among communities considering welcoming a casino with its low level of resident opposition. On Tuesday night, the Amsterdam Common Council voted 4-1 in favor of the project that officials are saying could bring jobs to an economically depressed region. Amsterdam Mayor Anne Thain recently spoke in favor of casino development in her city.
for the city, you know, the jobs and neighborhood revitalization and downtown rehabilitation and a vibrant waterfront combined with the casino amenities really would make Amsterdam a destination rather than just a pass-through on the thruway.
On June 24th, the Montgomery County Legislature will take a turn voting on the proposal. County Executive Matt Ossenfort believes the project will get the support it needs and said Montgomery County is unique in its position among the other counties in the Capital Region.
We really have some very strong support here in the community for what we're trying to do, and I think that speaks volumes about, number one, the project itself and the team we've put together, but also the need in this community. When you talk about 90% poverty rates, 31% of children living in poverty, that's almost one out of every three children living below the poverty line, that, you know, we are in an area that certainly could use a boost.
However, Montgomery County officials and the developers are asking that the New York State Gaming Commission approve their request to half the license application fee from $50 million to $25 million and a 60-day extension of the state's June 30th deadline. Austin Fort said he is working with the involved communities and developers to draft the letter as time grows short.
It's often perceived as we do not want to pay the $50 million licensing fee. And really what it is, it's more of a deferment. By reducing the licensing fee from 50 to 25 million, you're reducing that upfront cost, which makes this project viable, but the state would recoup every penny of that fee reduction over a period of time through an increased percentage of the gaming revenue. So we're going to make the state whole. It's just a matter of the economics.
Awesome Fort said he wants to make sure that the state is made whole, but the $50 million licensing fee is a barrier to Montgomery County as compared with other counties in the Capital Region. Elsewhere in the region, the Saratoga County Board of Supervisors recently voted to show its support for a casino project in East Greenbush in Rensselaer County, a project as part of a partnership between the Saratoga Casino and Raceway and Churchill Downs. The City of Schenectady and Schenectady County Legislature have also shown their support for a casino project. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1425. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.